You're listening to the Free to Be Mindful podcast, which provides bite-sized tips for busy parents, educators, and anyone working with kids. These real talk conversations focus on mindful living, mental health, and personal growth, helping all to learn, grow, and inspire with mindfulness in mind. I'm your host, Vanessa De Jesus Guzman, educator, licensed professional counselor, entrepreneur, and mom. I'm passionate about helping folks live life with peace of mind and ease of heart while not losing their, well, you know, here we go. Hello and welcome back to episode 98 of the Free to Be Mindful podcast. I hope that you're feeling good, looking good, and doing better in this world than you were yesterday. So today is the very first time of the Free to Be Mindful podcast is hosting a guest to the show. This is a brand new format for season 4, where we'll be having a guest every third Monday of the month. We'll be discussing how mindful living, mental health, and personal growth intersect with the guest expertise. So today's topic has to do with National Childhood Obesity Awareness Month, which happens in the month of September. And in September, we begin to send our kids back to school and we start preparing their lunches or giving them money for lunch. And it's awesome to have this awareness at the forefront of our minds because it really promotes, hopefully, the resources and tools that advocate for healthy growth and prevent obesity in children. So I'm so excited for today's guest. Imagine a drum roll in your head. Our very first guest is food and health coach, Naomi Jerez. Naomi, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here, Vanessa.
I'm so, so glad that you're here. So to share with our listeners a little bit about Naomi before we get into some awesome conversation, she is Dominican and grew up in the Bronx, just like me, and she's a wife and mom of two young boys. When she was in college, people would ask her, if you could pick any job without worry, what would that be? She used to say, I want to own a food truck where I make delicious food that's not just healthy for us, it's better. And it's no surprise that she is now a food and health coach. She's passionate about helping women of color take control of their nutrition, improve their health, and lose weight without dieting. That is key. All while regaining their energy, confidence, and living their best life. Naomi, I'm so happy you're here. What a super cute intro. And we have so much in common, beginning with being Dominican, with growing up in the Bronx, with being boy moms, and with losing a ton of weight too after becoming moms.
Yes, both of us.
So what else would you like to add to that intro? Share a little bit more about yourself.
I am really grateful to be here having this conversation. As you mentioned, after I had both my boys, I did go on my own wellness journey. And with that, I lost a total of 50 pounds, which was really unplanned. It's just what happened after I started really prioritizing myself and my care and with no restrictions. So I think those are key points to mention because oftentimes we think it needs to be restrictive or there's a specific number we need to hit. And although that was my case and my journey, it was totally unplanned and I focused more on taking care of myself.
Yeah. And I think that the restrictive part really stands out to me because when we hear losing weight, automatically it seems like we hear dieting. And then at least in my mind, I get all of the crazy thoughts, right? And keto and do this and do that and all of the different things that are out there that I will say I will try. And then I get really overwhelmed. And by day 4, I'm like, I'm done.
Right. Exactly.
So how do you put that at the forefront with the clients that you work with? How do you put that at the forefront of their minds of not going on these restrictive, crazy things, but just kind of living life in a healthier way?
That's a great question. I think it really begins with education and really teaching my clients how food works in our body. And although we do make adjustments, it's starting off with the food that they already love to eat. And most of the time it's adding more to what you're eating than taking away, which surprises a lot of people. So it can be a really, I guess, mind-boggling approach and very different from the trends and what we hear all over the media and out here when you're really turning the approach on its head and adding more to your plate instead of necessarily taking away right away.
Yeah. And that's really surprising because all of a sudden you think of like smaller plates and smaller bites and everything just less as opposed to adding more. And it really goes with, it seems like when you said education, also changing our mindset about the way that we look at food and the relationship that we have with food.
Absolutely. It is changing that relationship because surprisingly, and I feel like it happens in a lot of areas in our lives, like money and not being knowledgeable and being taught about money or how to handle conflict in relationships, which I'm sure you are the expert in, you know, handling strong feelings. We rarely are taught these things as we grow up and we kind of make our own assumptions or come up with our own coping mechanisms to deal with these things. And with food is the same exact process where we don't really know how food works for us, how can food can be an advantage, how can it make us feel great, and really, how can we accomplish the goals that we have physically and mentally and how we want to feel through food. And most of the time is just playing around with it. And we have to eat to live and to survive. But how can we do that with more mindfulness and more education so that you are getting all the benefits that it should be providing us with?
I love that. And I get something that you said, we have to, you know, live to eat. And I always go back and forth, like, are we living to eat or are we eating to live? Which one is it? Because sometimes I get stuck on one end more than another because food is good and it's delicious. It is. And it's so ingrained in really, you know, not only who we are as people, but also culturally. So, you know, we coming from Dominican background, like, I remember eating, you know, every single dinner, it was the beans and the rice and the meat and the platanos, which is plantains. And it was always like you had to finish everything that was on your plate. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as moms, we take what we were brought up with and then we can impose that on our kids. So before we even, you know, touch upon the topics of kids, I really want to talk to first moms and caregivers, those people who are, you know, putting the food on the plate or just buying the food wherever it is because we lead busy, busy lives, and really talking about what kind of pointers, what can we take on that end for ourselves first before we even start talking about how do we help our kids and their relationship with food?
Yeah, it really starts with us before we start teaching our kids because kids really just follow along with what we're doing, right? And no matter how much you tell them to eat the broccoli and have the salad and all that, if they see that you're not doing it, they are for sure not going to do it. So with us, it goes back to dismantling all those beliefs of we have to finish everything in our plate and this is how a dinner must look like or not look like, and really figuring those things out for ourselves. Before I say that the kids start modeling after us anyway with the changes. So it's not like you start them on this really official process, but you alone working on these things, the mom alone working on maybe adjusting what she's eating, learning how to read the food labels, learning how to balance out the meals more. It doesn't mean you completely take away rice and beans and the plantains and all of that. That can all still remain. But it's just a certain way of doing things. And with that, with emptying out your plate is like really also learning about fullness levels because we're taken that innate, it's taken away from us at a very young age to follow our innate bodies. And when we feel full and stopping to eat because of this notion of you have to finish everything on your plate, right? So it's kind of training ourselves and learning about ourselves again, or reminding ourselves because it's within us. So then the children can start following along.
Absolutely. And I think that that's really where the relationship that we have with food and the things that we already have, like how we should be eating, how that really intersects with mindfulness. So just even starting off with that self-awareness of what does feeling full feel like, right? What does
Yeah.
that feel like? Not only literally in our bodies, in our bellies, but then also the other part emotionally, you know, like how do we feel when we're full? Are we paying attention to our satisfaction levels, or are we just wanting more because it's there? And that I feel like is probably the foundation to a lot of the things, and then where, you know, different avenues that we can go down as far as our relationship with food.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really, kids know, babies know, right? We're born with that. If you're feeding a baby a bottle, they'll spit it out when they're full. When they're very young, they stop eating. But the older they get, it's like, and I know it can be frustrating if you made this really nice dinner and the kid is refusing to eat or not eating as much as it would please you, but it's really teaching them to respect their body, right? And as a mom, like, you can probably tell if they ate enough or not, but sometimes they really are, their hunger levels change and they really are full. So it's learning that for ourselves, and then they follow along with that.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned that. So not only having the self-awareness within your own body, but then as a mom, right? As a caregiver, as somebody who's feeding someone else, understanding that it's okay if they don't eat all of your food, despite all of the effort that
I
you
know.
put into that dinner.
Yes, I get frustrated too.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's where I really would like to speak to moms as far as listening in, kind of what's happening within your own mind and within your own body, because that self-awareness is so very important as far as what feelings are creeping up when they're not eating your food, or when they just look at their plate and, you know, they're like, what's this? Like,
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
like that. After you just spent an hour, you know, 30 to 60 minutes trying to, you know, cook up this meal that you thought was one thing. And then all of a sudden it's like they're popping your bubble. And then it's really paying attention to the feelings that come up there as far as, are you going to react to that and have that explode? And then there goes not only them actually eating the meal, but then the experience that goes along with dinner time, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. When those kinds of things happen, which happens a lot at my dinner table, because my younger one is really picky and he will dissect anything I make. But the key with that is just letting them be for a little while, like not getting offended. And I know it's tough. But as the kids sits there and sees you enjoy the meal and sees everybody else eating, they're going to kind of feel a little bit left out, and they're going to be curious too. So if you just leave it alone and not pay too much attention to it and just give them the permission to either eat or not eat, you know, is their decision. However, you do still need to stay at the table because it's family time. They'll see you, you know, they'll see you, and they'll start to eventually poke at the food and lick their finger and then grab a piece. So it's a lot of self-regulating too, and just giving them the space to be and showing them instead of telling them how good the food is and how everybody else is enjoying it.
I so love that. And self-regulating is another aspect of mindfulness, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, you're not only aware of what's happening, but then you can kind of regulate or fix, you know, as far as like what's happening. And they do learn everything from us. So if they see us kind of get riled up and get loud and like, you need to start eating, you know, why aren't you eating that? That's good for you. As we escalate, then our kids escalate. And that's when it turns into this big thing. And then people are mad at the table, including yourself, as opposed to, just as you were saying, kind of letting it go, having them still sit there. And then eventually they do start poking and fiddling and will eat something, even though they've already said, oh, I'm not hungry, or I don't know what this is, or this looks weird.
All the things.
All the things.
It drives me crazy, but my younger son, he sometimes doesn't like to use the utensils, so he'll use his fingers. And I just pick my battles with that and let him use his fingers if that means he's going to eat something and try something, if he doesn't want to use the fork or the spoon or whatever.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because I have an almost 9-year-old. How old are your boys?
Eight and six.
Okay, so around that same age range, right? And in my house, I'm like, you know what? Just eat how you're gonna eat, make the mess. And sometimes I feel the feelings in me, but I just take a deep breath and I let it go, even though I try to help him, you know, like the pieces are falling off the plate, right? Just so that he can be conscious and aware of that. But then at my mom's house, and when you take, I think, our culture into it as well, my mom will still take the spoon and try to feed him so that he doesn't make the mess. And I'm like, no, he's almost 9 years old. He can be eating himself. But what I also notice is that when she's actually spoon feeding him, he eats more because it's literally being shoved in his mouth. As far as how I do it, I'm like, just eat what you're going to eat and then you can leave things on the plate. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's a delicate situation, and my mom has definitely done the same. My mom puts my 6-year-old in a high chair so he doesn't make a mess. And he's like overgrown in this seat. But depending on how she's feeding him, for example, if he's watching TV or if he's on a tablet or something like that, that's how we can start to lose track of our fullness levels too. Because if somebody's just feeding you, of course you're going to open your mouth and you kind of become numb to what's going on because your attention is focused somewhere else. So that goes for the home too. Like if you're eating in front of the TV or you're doing something else while you're eating, you're not even really noticing what's happening because it's so automatic to chew and swallow, that you don't even know what you're eating, if you're enjoying it or not, if you're quite full, how it's making you feel. So with children, that's often how it starts to happen because they're in front of the tablets or the TVs or someone's actually feeding you. And when you tell them to stop or you get the cues to stop, always like the grandma's like, no, just one more, three more, just the last one. And they keep feeding them.
And that's exactly what mindful eating, well, those are examples of what mindful eating cannot be, and the opposite of what mindful eating is. It reminds me when I went on a mindfulness retreat, and 2.5 days of that 5-day retreat were in complete silence. Like, not only you in silence with your thoughts, but no reading, no music, like truly complete silence, just you with yourself. And it was in a big setting, and almost think of like a Harry Potter like dining hall with like long camp looking tables with all of these other adults that were on the mindfulness retreat. And it was also silence during meal times as well. So it reminds me at the table, you know, in our homes, we have conversation, and that's where I do mindfulness in the sense of like, well, what are you thankful for today? What are interesting things that happened today so that you can have that conversation with the family going? And that's great. And it does take us away from the food as well, even though we're still there. But when we're watching TV, we're totally not there. And that's how we just keep eating, as you were saying, without feeling that feeling of fullness. But at this retreat, we were in complete silence, and you can hear every clink and clank and the people chewing and all the sounds that you're like, whoa, I don't know if I really actually want to hear all of these things. But because you didn't even want to make eye contact because you're just like chewing with your mouth full and like not being able to say anything to someone, the amount of attention to the detail of the food on the plate that I feel like we all place was incredible as far as looking at the colors, looking at the textures, what even happened to like the things you were eating as you went and picked them along. And really paying attention to like literally every bite that you took and how that felt going down your throat and into your belly. It was so, some of it was just like, oh my goodness, are we actually doing this? But then in hindsight, as I reflect back on the experience, some of it was really amazing because I almost never had that experience before of being 1,000% present with the meal that I was eating. And I noticed that I actually ate less because I was paying attention of what's going in my body and how my body actually felt after I was eating that meal.
Yeah, that's very intense.
Yes.
and just I want to like put both parts together, let's say, of this experience and mentioning screen time. I know that sometimes we really need the screen to eat in peace. I get that too. So don't think I'm like this person that's like, ah, no screen time. I use it. I'm not going to lie. I'm not a hypocrite. However, if we have those moments of teaching and it's not happening all the time, then you're more able to pay attention when, let's say, you need the screen. So it's not something that, you know, it's at every single moment. It's an innate feeling that we get. So once we learn about that feeling and how it feels in the body, then if for some reason you are doing another activity while you're eating, you're better able to catch those cues from your body. So there's no extremes in either direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I think that my experience was definitely an extreme,
yes,
but it's not practical in everyday life.
Yes.
But I love the way you said that, like when we do it, when we have that balance, then we're better able to be more mindful when we are eating, when in case we do have a screen mm-hmm. at that time. And sometimes it's not even a screen. Sometimes it's like, hurry up and eat the snack in this
yes.
car before you're going to the next activity. How do you manage that with your boys?
It's true. And it happens to us. We have a very long commute to school. So I do pack a lot of snacks for them. And sometimes we're eating like in the train now that masks are not completely required, or in the car. That's a lot of times where breakfast happens if we're driving. So it's totally okay, like, just to take the food with you. I understand, especially in this culture and world, that there's no, sometimes not a very specific dedicated time to eating where it's at the table and it's peaceful and all that. Sometimes it is on the go and on the run. So making, you know, mindful choices with that, and honestly, being fed is the priority, no matter what's going on. So we car, train, walking, like, it's all good.
Yeah, definitely. And then if we can get into some quick tips as far as the foods when we are on the go, because we do lead such busy lives, mm-hmm. You know, stepping away from the mindfulness for a moment, but at least being mindful of like making good choices of foods that are not only healthy, but filling and that are good to take on the go so that we can make those choices instead of stopping at a fast food restaurant and getting things that are not the best for us.
Yeah, that's a great question. I tend to buy, especially now, a lot of snacks for the boys. Now I try and teach them the difference between a snack and a treat. And I pack both for them. So with the snacks, I try and keep it to more fresh foods than anything else. So I'll pack a fruit or a yogurt, a sandwich with whatever your kid enjoys, whether it's peanut butter and jelly, ham and cheese, egg and cheese sandwich, with better quality bread, because bread can be another thing, with whole grain bread, full of seeds, things like that, fiber, protein. And then I add like little treats, like maybe it's three cookies in there, or they sell like little tiny packs of a brand called Yum Earth that they sell like jelly beans and gummy bears and sour tarts. And they love those things. And also like bars or Goldfish. So I try and put a range of those things in there. I always try and include some fresh kinds of food, some fresh fruits, and then also the treats. That way they have a variety of thing and they don't feel stuck like, oh, I need to eat these apple slices every single day. They have a little bit of each thing, but it's a lot more controlled and it's not the only thing they're eating.
Right, right. I love that. And then for moms, and I saw something on your Instagram the other day where you put peanut butter in the middle of the apple for the
yes.
foods that like fill you the most. What yeah. other tips do you have or suggestions do you have like that? Foods that are quick, but that are also filling to hold us through the days in our busy lives.
Yes, for adult women specifically, especially if you're running around a lot, protein is very important for us. And it is one of the main food groups that gives us satiety. For kids, it's a little bit different because their movement levels are a lot more different than moms. Not moms specifically, but women, especially if we're working and if we're sedentary a lot of the day. So for us, I would recommend Good quality protein shakes can be a lifesaver if you're on the go and really fast and don't have time to make anything. The apples with peanut butters are great. I always try and go for food pairings. So pairing protein with a carb, a carbohydrate, or a protein with a fat. So some nuts and pumpkin seeds are great. That
Okay.
can fit in your purse. The apple with the peanut butter. If you have a little cooler, maybe some turkey rolls with cheese. What else? I think those are like the main ones for on the go, like
That's
in your
great.
purse type of thing. But there's always like a little bit of yogurt with fruits, hummus with crackers, cheese and nuts. Think charcuterie board stylish things.
Yeah, those are definitely fun and easy. And I think
Yeah.
that at least in my house, that's what I tend to look for is the easy stuff and whatever is fast. Because sometimes if we really overthink it and we overcomplicate it, then you're just like, oh, let me get the takeout. You know, like what's going to be just the fastest thing, or let me go fast food. But there seem to be a lot of options. And sometimes it's, you know, just keeping it on a note on your phone, or if you know, putting it on a thing on your fridge so that you're just like, oh yeah, I can do this, until it becomes second nature and then part of our go-tos. Because I feel like if it's not part of your go-to at first, then you get stuck in thinking and then you just toss the whole idea out the window.
Yeah, and it's starting like when you're going grocery shopping, right? Whether that's online or in person, what are those things that you can grab that is going to make your life easier, and it can be a go-to right in your refrigerator or your pantry. So at first, it is a little bit more of taking a pause, slowing down, and planning that. And as you get used to it, it does become second nature and a lot quicker, and you know what you enjoy. But you can create a grab and go section right in your refrigerator with very little prepping and planning.
I love it. Yeah. And I think that that's what maybe a lot of moms are looking for. So tell us more as a food and health coach, how does your work with moms look like in order to then trickle down to all these other things that we've been talking about?
So yeah, I work with women one-on-one. I do one-on-one food coaching. So we start off mostly at looking at the foods that they are already eating, and then doing food education through there and teaching them how to balance their plate. What can they add? What can they remove? I love to use what I call my SAS method, where we subtract, substitute, and add to a plate. So it's a very easy, like, and fun acronym to go through to try and help yourself make decisions at first as to how you can alter this meal that you already love and not completely wiping it out altogether.
I love that. And then, so once they understand the SAS method, then what happens after that?
Then it's putting a lot of things into practice little by little because it can be super overwhelming when you're used to one thing and then you're trying to change so many things at once. So we start most of the time with just practicing with breakfast. It's one of the most important meals, especially to balance our blood sugar throughout the day. So we practice with that, and it can be a meal that's stressful, right? Like we're running out the door, we have to get the kids ready, we have to be somewhere at a specific time. So just getting a handle on that to begin with, it can be super beneficial. So that's definitely a starting point. And then it's, you know, helping with the groceries and seeing what's going on with lunch and with dinner, or maybe you're not able to have formal meals. So how can we incorporate small snacks throughout your day that are going to keep you satisfied and full and are going to be contributing to your wellness goals instead of crashing you throughout the day and needing more coffee and more sugar and all this? So, yeah.
Right. So I'm hearing that my coffee for breakfast is not the best idea to have on its own.
Not necessarily on an empty stomach,
There you go.
or
I
within
need to
the
set up a
first,
session with you.
or within the first hour of waking up, a little
Not
bit
a
later.
good idea.
Because when we wake up, our cortisol levels are really high, and coffee is also a stimulant. So it's best, especially if we're, you know, stressed out in the morning and we have a lot of things going on. Coffee can just exacerbate that and then crash us later on in the day and feel really depleted. So, if we just, I recommend starting with some lemon water. Giving your digestive system a little cleanse, getting some sunlight, having those cortisol level drop a little bit, and then enjoying your coffee.
I love it. Oh, so good. You're full of so much information that I need to start like taking notes for myself. And then your food and health. So how do you incorporate movement of the body within the work that you do?
Yes, movement is so important, not because of the very first thing that we think about losing weight. As we get older, age is not waiting for you, my dear. So we need to work with ourselves. It's really important to managing our blood sugar. So if you've ever gone to the doctor and they're warning you about, you know, maybe becoming pre-diabetic or anything like that, everyone's in your family, it's a really good way to manage that. It's a really good way to keep our lean muscle mass, which is very important for healthy aging and being able to move. With that comes really good bone health. A lot of women are at higher risk for osteoporosis and we break things. So it's, as you can see, as I'm explaining this, it is a chain of events that happen when you move, when we move, especially in strength training. So yes. Great, you might lose a few pounds, but it's really important to keep our lean muscle mass, to keep our sugar in balance, to keep our bone health. And it's excellent for mental health.
Right. I was waiting for that. I'm like, I know it's coming. I know it's
coming. Yes, it is the cherry on top.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for two things that came to mind as you were saying that, I have a big birthday coming up soon. So I don't want to say older I get, I don't know, the wiser I get, and as the numbers increase on the number line, I am seeing how important the strength training is, because oftentimes I feel, especially as women, we are almost conditioned of just thinking cardio, 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 but the strength training is so very important, especially for our bone health, that we continue with that as we continue to get wiser and older.
Yes. Absolutely. It is very important for us.
Yeah. And then the mental health, and that's, you know, the importance of it. And it's all really connected to each other. It's all cyclical as far as you work out, everything scientifically that happens within our hormones, those feel good feelings that we feel after we work out, and then how that's going to help you make better food choices and then continue moving so that you can not only feel good about yourself emotionally and mentally, but then physically as well.
Absolutely. Taking a holistic health approach is very beneficial, because in the way our society works, we'd like to isolate issues or challenges within ourselves. And that's a way that the medical system is set up too. Like, you have a heart doctor and a foot doctor and a, you know, but inside we're really interconnected. All the hormones talk to each other. And it's really important to kind of keep those in balance so that you feel well. And something that might be going on, let's say, in your head is being affected by something in your gut and you have no idea. And you're just thinking that it's a migraine and it's isolated to your head, but it's really not. The source of it is coming from somewhere else. The root cause, as they like to call it in functional medicine.
Yeah. And that goes both ways, right? So understanding you could have a migraine because of something that's happening within your stomach, but you can also have like bowel issues because, let's say, of anxiety or depression or some other diagnosable things. So it's so important for people to understand that, yes, there are different people that specialize in different areas. And you can have multiple people. For example, you can have a therapist and a food and health coach, and understanding that those two people, with your permission, can even talk to each other to see and to help how everything is related so that you can be at your best health and have a longer lifespan.
Yes. And with that, I would love to add, this goes back to you being in control and the boss of your health. Right? Because all these people, all these resources can be super helpful. But if you're not in tune, aware of your body and what's going on, then it becomes very difficult to connect those dots. So it starts with us and getting curious about ourselves, seeing how we feel, how different things affects us. And once we start doing that, then I think we have a better experience because we're able to better communicate with all these wonderful sources that there are.
And what a perfect way to bring it really back full circle, because it all goes to you being aware of what's happening within your body. And that is putting mindfulness at the forefront. So I always like to clarify, it's not sitting down and oming and floating away on a cloud. It's just being aware of what's happening within your body. How are things? How are you feeling emotionally and mentally? How is that interacting with how you feel physically and the things that you eat and how you're moving your body, or perhaps the lack thereof, and then what you can do to bring all of those things together.
Absolutely. I think that's the best way.
Yay. So let me ask you some wrap-up questions, taking
Yeah.
the three pillars that I am really passionate about into light. The first being, how do you integrate mindful living in your own life?
I try whenever I'm doing things to really pay attention to the feelings that come up for me. And if I really like that or not. Because your body can really let you know. And it's the same with food or any situation that you're in where you're like, oh, I didn't really like that. So then you won't try it again, or you try something new and you find that you do enjoy it. So I think I like to check in with myself after some sort of experience or on a consistent basis to see what I need as well.
I love it. The next question, what's your favorite way to take care of your mental health?
Exercising.
And she said that with a smile. And we've heard so much of your story, which shows so much personal growth. If you could be remembered for one thing, what would that one thing be?
Oh my goodness. I would love to be remembered for making an impact in our community and changing the statistics that are out here, right? Like we're leading in diabetes, heart disease, but we're up there, mental health. It's always Hispanics, Blacks. And I would love for our community to just be lower down on those stats.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just education and teaching and showing people how it's not so scary to implement these things. And yeah, I really hope that I have an impact in that.
How beautiful. And I really think that that'll be part of your legacy because you do such awesome work, which we
Thank
can
you.
always see on social media and other things. So tell us first, any other last thoughts that you would like to provide that perhaps we didn't touch upon the conversation? And then where can people find you and the awesome work that you're doing?
Last thoughts. I would say for anyone who's listening and who's scared and who's tried every single trendy diet out there to really slow down and see what it is that you would really like, kind of quiet out the noise of everything that's out there. Remember, it's a humongous business and you want to take an approach of actually taking care of yourself. Not every cookie cutter program is, a fit for everybody. So try and approach your health and your wellness and what your goals are in a way that fits you and your life for it to be more sustainable instead of you trying to fit into a program that was created for the masses. And don't give up. Try again. Try again. I know it can be very like frustrating maybe if this is like your 50th time trying something new, but I can promise you'll find your way.
I love that. And that's so needed because sometimes our lives do go ups and downs, right? And we have busy times and great times and sad times. And it's so easy to throw in the towel when the going gets rough, but knowing that we can always pick ourselves up and start again is really a big game changer from our mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And know there's tons of support out there too, so you don't have to do it by yourself.
Yes. And if you'd like Naomi's support, Naomi, where can we find you?
Yes, I'll be happy to support you. You can find me on Instagram at Naomi Jerez. I'm sure it'll be on the show notes, but my name is NaiHomyJerez. And that is also my website, naomijerez.com. On there, I have a few free resources that you are welcome to download. I have a guide as to how to lose weight without dieting. And I also have a recorded workshop on how to eat with confidence. So you guys are welcome to grab those. And if you would like to book a consultation with me, you can find the links on my website and my Instagram.
I absolutely love it. I am thrilled that you are here sharing your levels of expertise. And I do encourage listeners to check out her website, and all of it will be on the show notes or on my website as well. All of the information will be there linked to make it easy for you and really take advantage of these free resources because there is a lot of support out there. And as Naomi was saying, it can seem so overwhelming, but knowing that you can count on people like her, free resources, and then, if you want to level up, having that into a paid professional relationship to really make that difference in your life, if that's what you're looking for. And when it comes to, again, physical health, mental health, they're all related. And we want to take care of ourselves the best that we can so that we can have the most fulfilling life and so that we can be there for our kids. So, Naomi, thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time and expertise.
Thank you, Vanessa, for having me. It's a pleasure, and I'm so happy that we're having this conversation.
Yes. And for today's guided meditation, I'd like for you all to take a quiet moment after this episode to just reflect on the message that you heard, on all of the education, on all of the tidbits. And there was a lot of important and great information, but think to yourself, what is one piece of information that you can take and begin implementing today? Just one simple piece, because it could be done one step at a time. Thank you so much for listening in, and we'll catch you next week. I hope you enjoyed this week's show. It would mean a ton if you took this moment to review the Free to Be Mindful podcast on the platform you catch your favorite shows. That quick and easy act lets me know what you enjoy, and it helps others find the podcast too. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you can listen along next week. In the meantime, I welcome you to catch me on social media at Counselor V. De Jesus. And as always, remember, in a world where you are free to be anything that you want to be, you are always free to be mindful. Catch you next week.